for the last round interview of the week.
He is a flyweight contender in the flyweight division, obviously, who fights this Saturday, June 24th, at the theater at Madison Square Garden in New York City. And I believe this is his first, and we'll ask him in a second, but this is his first fight in probably the biggest arena of his career so far, which we'll touch on in a second. 8-0 with 3 KOs. Christian Robles joins us on the last round this week. Thank you for joining us, Christian.
Thank you guys for having me, man. Appreciate it. Looking forward to all this talk.
You got it. So, like I just touched on, you have this fight on June 24th, this upcoming Saturday, at the theater at Madison Square Garden. And then looking through your record, a lot of your fights have been previously in Pomona, California. You had some fights in Tijuana, Mexico. There was one, I think your first one was in Burbank, or one of your first ones was in Burbank, California. How different do you think it's going to be fighting in an arena like this, especially in somewhere like New York City, as opposed to the smaller venues that you've been at so far?
I think it's going to be louder, which I'm looking forward to, man. I've always been a fan of the ring walks more than the actual, like, after, you know, so far all wins, but like after victory, I don't know. I've heard other fighters say this when I asked them, but the ring walk is amazing. So I'm really looking forward to it. The only difference on this one, it's, there's a big chance they're gonna be booing me. You know, it's a big Puerto Rican atmosphere over there versus a Mexican. So super excited to hear those boos. I'm not gonna lie. Like, I'm actually looking forward to that, turning those boos into cheers. But as far as like smaller venues, yeah, it doesn't really faze me. My first fight was in Burbank. It was a Top Rank event. So that was cool. I had one fight in Tijuana where they were actually cheering for the other dude. We were both from the same place. So it was pretty funny. But yeah, just looking forward to the atmosphere. I feel like I shine under pressure. So
rewinding the clock here just a little bit. For our listeners who aren't aware of you, because you're obviously coming up and you're 8-0 and 3 KOs, as I mentioned a couple minutes ago. What do you think is your first memories of boxing? Like, you know, maybe how old were you when you first really noticed the sport, or, you know, maybe noticed like, hey, you know, maybe I kind of want to jump into this and see what's up.
You know, it's crazy. I didn't grow up with like most fighters with the traditional boxing family. My uncles did box, however, as kids and as an amateur, they boxed out of Lincoln Park. But then I never trained with them. I never, you know, saw them box. I never went to any of their fights. However, we would fight. They would get on their knees and put on their gloves, and they would just start fighting with me. And, you know, I would always lose. So I'd always like look forward to the next fight. I actually grew up watching WWE more. So I'd always try those tricks on my little brother and on my uncles. So I grew up liking the action, the fighting. And, I would say, as far as boxing wise, my first interaction with the sport was De La Hoya versus Mayweather. My parents bought it; just family was watching it. But that's it. It gave me, like, I paid no attention to it. I think I was in fifth grade at the time, and some kids were talking about it at school, but I paid no attention to it. I was more into WrestleMania. And then fast forward, probably freshman or sophomore year, I saw this local gym nearby my house in Bellflower, California, where I used to live. It was local MMA gym. It was called Centerline Gym, right? It had two cutout cardboard figures, like in a boxing stance, and it said free week trial. So I begged my mom to take me, because, you know, she hates fighting. And now that I remember, me and my homie were actually, you know, boxing in our backyard as like on that very same day that I asked her. So but not just because of boxing, I just like fighting. And then she took me. They had me kick the bag the first week. I was like, what the hell is this? That was my introduction to the MMA world. I did that for 2 years. I did some jujitsu, kicks and all that. And it was fun. But I always gravitated towards boxing. And I told my dad I wanted to have a fight. And then he, for some reason, saw a video of Manny Pacquiao on YouTube. And he took me to Wild Card one day. And the rest is history.
How was that? What, you know, because there's a lot of people who have never even been to Hollywood, California, let alone the Wild Card Gym. A lot of boxing fans. The Wild Card Gym is to a lot of boxing fans, a lot of hardcore boxing fans, especially. It's sacred ground. There's a lot of Hall of Famers that have been through that gym. Obviously, Manny Pacquiao probably being one of the, if not the biggest. Yeah. And then you got, you know, Freddie Roach owns it. Freddie Roach is obviously a Hall of Famer. And it's right, pretty much right smack dab in the middle of Hollywood right there on Vine Street. What was that first day like for you at the Wild Card gym? What do you remember?
So take it back a little notch. My dad told me he wanted to take me to Wild Card. We were actually driving there. And I was like, where are we going? He wouldn't want to tell me until I finally got out of him. I had him turn around. I wouldn't say scared, but I felt the pressure just because, like you say, it's a very renowned world-class gym. I trained MMA for 2 years. Like, I didn't feel I was ready to live up to Wild Card standards. I went back. I told my dad, let me practice for a few more months. And then on the actual first day we went, my dad, he was working out at LAX. He met us there. And a lot of people don't know this. Only people that like really watched me from ages 14 to 19 at Wild Card. My dad met us at Wild Card and my mom took me on the train and she said, remember the stops. You're coming tomorrow by yourself. So from ages 14 to like 19 until I got a car, I was on the metro from the blue line to the red line, yada, yada, taking the buses straight out of high school by myself. But the first day was really good. Actually, I went there. They were super friendly. My dad introduced himself like, hey, I was on the phone with y'all. This is my son. And then Freddie Roach sat next to me. Wow. And he was like, yeah, it was pretty weird. He sat next to me. He was like, hey, how you doing? You fighting? I was like, no, not really. I just, you know, come in here, train, just try it out. Super nervous. And then he said, you have a trainer. I was like, no, it's my first day. And he said, come tomorrow at 7 a.m. I have a trainer for you. Turns out it was Marvin Simoteo.
Oh, wow.
My current trainer. he was his, it was the first fight, I believe, was against Timothy Bradley. He was straight from the Philippines. So me and him started at Wild Card the same day. You can see on the first, I think it was a 24/7 video, he's walking with this little green backpack to Wild Card that they had him. Yeah, so it's funny. We started at the same time. So however long Marvin's been there, I was with him. But yeah, Freddie taught me how to wrap my hands during, you know, traditional hand wraps. And it was pretty cool. I met the guys of Ray Beltran, Cesar Martinez, Brian Valoria. That was my stablemate at the time. And those were guys I thought everybody knew at the time. You know, Brian Valoria is probably the biggest name, but in the flyweight division, they didn't know him like that. So I remember asking my MMA coach, I was like, hey, do you know Brian Valoria? Do you know Ray Beltran? He had no idea who any of those guys were. But to me, they were like my first introduction to famous people and just like pro athletes. And I was just, as a kid, I was pretty starstruck. And it was just like an honor to train with everybody.
And as of today, you're still training with Marvin Simoteo.
Yeah, I'm training with Marvin Simoteo. He wasn't my full-on amateur coach, but I've been with him for a majority of my career.
That's crazy. What a story that is. What a story.
Yeah, not a lot of people know this.
Yeah, that's a crazy story. So, you kind of touched on it in how you, when you're in your description of your first visit there, and how Freddie Roach, you know, you met Freddie Roach and he's like, hey, you know, how do you fight? How long have you fought? And you're just like, oh, it's my first day. Do you have a trainer? And you said, oh, not really. And he's like, okay, come tomorrow and I'll have somebody for you. You know, as I mentioned when I asked you the question, you know, Wild Card in the boxing world, in the fight world in general, but in the boxing world especially, it's looked at as, you know, some people can look at it as intimidating, especially being young, going there for the first time. What you got kind of going through that and us talking to you right now and going there for the first time as a teenager and then going there by yourself for so many years and then, you know, being at where you're at right now and about to fight in New York City, being with the same trainer, Marvin Simoteo, what kind of advice would you give to younger people who might be listening to this or might see your words right now, your audio words or anything like that, and are thinking about getting into the fight game and maybe live in LA and want to go visit the Wild Card gym to kind of give it a shot, but they're kind of intimidated because of the legendary status that gym has? What would you say to them?
That Wild Card is truly a family. You got people from all sorts of life, whether it's crazy because they say it, from cops to criminals to rich people to poor people to beginners to clients to pro fighters, and everybody treats each other with respect and everybody is always given a helping hand. It really was not traumatical. I feel very welcome. And to this day, everybody gives off that vibe to everybody at the gym. So just come down to Wild Card. You'll have an amazing time and just find a connection with the trainer.
Have you met Manny Pacquiao?
Yeah.
How was actually that?
It was pretty cool. I dropped this guy in my third amateur fight, and I was fighting at their gym, right? And the ref saw me hurt, and he stopped the fight in the last 5 seconds of my fight. And the trainer of the other kid went up to me and Marvin, and we were like, I don't know how we won that fight, but they ended up, I guess, to like reimburse that. They gave me the fight of the night trophy for me and him. And so I was all proudly there bringing it to the gym, right? And because we know what happened. And then Manny Pacquiao was there, forgot for which fight, for just like promotion. And they used to close the gym upstairs. And luckily, you know, I was just a little kid. So they let me in, especially knowing Marvin. And I took a picture of Manny with my trophy. It was pretty cool. And then years later on, I think he was getting ready for not Thurman, probably a fight after that. But I saw him once again. At that point, like, I've seen him a couple of times. Yeah, it was more like normal. I wasn't that much starstruck. I was just like, hey, what's up, man? How you doing? I actually been sparring his son recently. So, like, oh, wow. It's just crazy how full circle everything comes out.
Not a lot of people know that his son has been in the States training. And, you know, obviously we saw clips of him in the Philippines, you know, with his dad especially, but he's been actually over here in LA training. Can you kind of give us some brief insight how he's doing?
He's doing good. He's doing really good. At first I used to be able to just, you know, work with him, especially as a lighter guy. Like, I just help him out. But after a while, it was like, okay, I got to turn it up on you, because if not, I'm not saying he'll put in some work, but he can land some shots, especially he's bigger than me. So he's got my respect. Which is good in a short amount of time, which is the crazy part. He's a very fast learner. So just give him time. That's all I'm saying. Just give him time. He's doing way better than when we first started working maybe a couple months ago.
Who would you say was your favorite fighter or favorite fighters when you started fighting at Wild Card and, you know, taking the metro line and the buses there for all those years? Who would you say around those years was your main guy?
To be honest, if I had to say like who were my main guys, the people I looked up to, it would be the pro fighters at Wild Card. I still, to even to this day, I probably won't play like an old boxing fight. So it was Ray Beltran. I used to always root for him. The first pro I ever sparred, Alejandro Perez. He used to fight for the Top Rank card. Brian Veloria, like Cesar Martinez. There's a couple of guys, but those are the main guys that are always super humble, and I knew they were pro fighters and active. So, yeah, those guys are someone I always look up to, always seen their pictures at the gym, and I was like, yo, these are the guys I aspire to be one day.
Christian, did you get any work in with any celebrities, you know, Mario Lopez, Mark Wahlberg? You managed to drop any of those guys?
I know Mario. I've never worked with him. It's great. The promoter for Red Boxing, he said he was an actor. Before he was a promoter, I sparred him. I got a picture of me sparring that guy. There's another guy, man. When they ask you what's your favorite movie, and it just goes off the top of your head. But I've met plenty of celebrities, Shapiro and everybody else. So, but they're all super humble. That's just the thing. Like, you just run into everybody at Wild Card, and everybody is extremely humble.
What would you say from Freddie Roach or Marvin Zamudio? Like, obviously they're still involved in your career. Marvin is, you know, your main guy right now. He's been your main guy since you started. But out of both of those guys, what is, you know, maybe that one, you know, motivational piece of advice or one thing that kind of sticks out in your mind that they've told you over the years that you always remember?
You know what? I can't say personally from speaking to Freddie, but I've seen him written down. Its main thing is just says, just show up, put in the work. And that's just one very important thing. It's just a lot of people make excuses, whether it's too early, too late, or whatever. Like, I had no excuse as a 14-year-old going from Lakewood, California, all the way to Hollywood. So just showing up. As far as Marvin, there's something he said. It's not his direct quote, but he said in his, like, if if something is not okay, it means it's not the end. Like, everything's going to be okay at the end. So just keep on going no matter what. And if you really know, like, we started our amateur careers as an 0-4 fighter. I was going to quit.
Man.
Yeah.
When you got to, okay, taking your first loss as an amateur, obviously you're undefeated as a pro right now, which is great. You know, we should obviously continue success on that. But taking your first loss in anything sucks. But taking that first loss as an amateur, how did that feel?
It wasn't bad. And I'll tell you why. Because I started during MMA, and that transition period to Wildcard, I was still training both gyms. I only went to Wildcard because I wanted to fight. So when I went, I already had signed up for a tournament. And it turned out to be an open tournament. And I'm not sure if you guys are familiar with the amateur circuit, but a novice category is from 0 to 10 fights, which is what I fall under, 0 fights. However, this is an open tournament, so you can fight any guy from 0 to 100 plus, right? And I had a bunch of people at Wildcard telling me not to fight. And but we did it. I just wanted to have fun. I just wanted to fight. That's it. I just really just wanted to try it. And I fought this guy at a Shane Mosley's gym. So I met Shane Mosley, which was super exciting that time, right? With 8 fights, apparently. And I looked horrible. I was, because I had 2 months of training. That's it. And I went in just swinging. I lost. And it wasn't bad. It was just like, whatever. Now we got to move on. My second fight, man, it's crazy. So my second fight, I was weighing 114. And I think there's a 10-pound limit in the amateurs. And I fought this guy who was 125. What my amateur coach did, Marvin didn't go for this fight. He changed the 4 to a 9 so I could fight this guy. Because there was one guy my way who had 8 fights as well, and this guy only had 1 fight. So I had him busted open the first round, and then I got an 8-count the second round, and I think they stopped the fight. And I was like, damn. And then a week later, we fought. And that's when that knockdown happened, fight of the night trophy and all that. So it was just like, damn. But I'm like, even though you think you could have won, or you know you won, like, it was disheartening, especially after the 4th fight. And I wanted to quit. And I told my grandpa, and I was like, oh, I want to quit. Like, well, it's not that I wanted, but I was just like, I'm thinking about it. Like, maybe I just suck, you know? But the first 4 fights happened in a matter of 4 months. With 4 months of boxing, I had no real skill. And then we signed up for the Oxnard National Pals. And I fought this huge ass dude. This is the only time in all my fights, all of them, that I've ever been scared. I fought this dude who was like, I'm 5'3", 5'4", and this guy was like 5'10", 5'11". He now fights at, last time I checked in the amateurs, he was fighting at 132, knocking everybody out. This dude was freaking huge. I go in there, he's the only guy, I'm weighing 114. I didn't know there was a 112 division. I fight at 119. So this guy's right, barely making weight. I'm over here comfortable eating in the morning. And then I give him 2 8 counts in the second round. He gives me an 8 count in the first round. I give him 2 in the second round. And I get the decision. It was just like, that's insane. And then he goes up after me after the fight. And he's like, hey, man, you can't lose in the finals because you beat me. He's like, I got gassed out. I was like, okay. Like, thank you, you know? And then I see my opponent. It's this guy from Vegas, my height. I was like, oh, this is a piece of cake if I just beat this guy. So I ended up winning the National Pals. I had a national title under my belt. And then I won my 6th fight. I lost my 7th, lost my 8th. And then I just kept on winning. I just kept on winning. And I was like, yo, this is cool. But it's like a message I always want to give to like the younger generation. Just don't give up. Because look, have you guys ever seen that like picture where it says, if you give up and you're this, like they're trying to like dig a hole and there's diamonds at this one. And they're right. So close, yet they give up. It was like, yo, that's me in my 4th fight. And then 5th one, 6th one, I win a national tournament. So I was like, come on. So
did Marvin, you know, because like you said, in 4 months, you're 0-4 and you're like, man, this sucks. Especially being young, you're just like, start to question like, hey, man, is this right for me? You know,
yeah.
Talking to fighters, that happens all the time. Did, you know, after that 5th fight and then you win the tournament in Oxnard and all that. At what point do you think that Marvin Zamudio, your trainer, kind of told you whether it was, you know, just before you turned pro or however X amount of amateur fights you had? At one point, did he tell you like, "Hey, you know, I think we got something here. You know, let's go pro."
You know what? He during the 4th fight was my last fight with him.
Oh, wow.
Marvin. Yeah, I was training with this guy. We call him Superman at the amateurs and wild card. We had a fall off.
Right.
It just sucks. I'm not sure you guys want to put this in, but me and him just had a bad falling out. I tried my best to reestablish that relationship, but I ended up turning pro with that guy. Uh-huh. And you know, I just wish I would have stayed with Marvin, but he just didn't have time to go tournament after tournament. He was mainly for Freddie. I was basically a client to him at that time, just fought amateur, you know? So, but, it's like, again, it's just crazy how everything falls back full circle. I was always sparring his guys though. I was sparring Brian. I was sparring as an amateur. I was sparring Zhao Shimi, 2-time Olympian gold medalist. He became a world champion. I was sparring on my way to get ready for the pros. I mean, right before turning pro, Jesus Cuellar. Mm-hmm. And I'm a flyweight walking around 120. He's walking around 150 for the Abner Modis fight.
Oh, wow. So, that was a good fight too.
Yeah, it was a really good fight. Surprised he lost. He was looking really good in camp, but he just lost too much weight too fast. But the reason I turned pro and stopped doing amateurs during that fast decision, because I only had something 20 fights, I knew that there was no future for me in the amateurs when I entered the Golden Gloves and I couldn't do it. There was the pre-check-in for the weights. I go hop on the scale. Before I hop on the scale, they check your book and all that, and they asked me if I was a U.S. citizen. I said, no, I was born in Mexico. And they said, I'm sorry, man, you can't compete. So I was pissed. I was crying. And then I went to Tierra Mia and I got me a coffee and I felt better. But it was like, damn, I can't compete in national tournaments no more. I can't get ranked by the United States. So thankfully, I won the PALs as a novice. And then when I went to college at Cal State Long Beach for a bit, and I fought a national collegiate. I entered myself in a collegiate tournament. It was a national tournament. I fought this guy out of Ohio. And I beat him. So I got 2 national titles under my belt. I knew I couldn't be that recognized by myself as an amateur. I won the BCR, which is like a world renowned tournament that they hold at Desert Showdown. I mean, at the Palm Springs. I did it the last year. They had to find a replacement. And, man, it sucks. If you guys know boxing, Recipes, Dominic Cerna, like, that is heartbreaking. He messaged me saying, hey, man, there's this guy who, like, fell out. We need a match. It's going to be at 123. So I went up and fought this guy who had over blah, blah, blah fights, over 100 fights. It was only an open tournament for the top ranked amateurs in the United States. I'm not ranked. I only had about 15, 20, 16 fights at the point. And it was because Dominic put me in that I was able to get that belt, get that win. So, man, yeah, rest in peace, Dom. Yeah, man, I love Dom.
Whew. Yeah. So how many days a week as of today do you find yourself going to wild card and training? Are you doing it like a full-time job, I'm assuming, like any full-time fighter?
Yeah, 5 days a week, Monday through Friday.
And are you there? How long do you think you're there on a typical day?
Officially, I'm there from 10:30 to 1 to 1:30 p.m., and then I tend to linger around for an extra hour. So just in case.
What's the worst, because obviously you're a pro, so you know you have your discipline, and you can't get to this level without having some form of discipline. But every fighter doesn't like every type of exercise. What exercise, if we asked Marvin Zamudio today, would he say that Christian Robles just hates?
You know what? I don't think Marvin can answer that one, because every time he asks me to work, I do it. I always ask for more. He's kind of the one who tends to tone it down in between when we don't have fights. I'm always less far. And he's like, you got nothing, like, relax. So it's not him. I think it would be my strength and conditioning coach. that used to have this thing called tempo runs. It was just like like 80% of a run for 20 minutes on a track. Oh man, it felt like throwing up those days. Like, so like mile repeats. Yeah. Anything like fast cardio like that is definitely things I hate.
Who was the first person that you sparred at wild card? I mean, it doesn't have to be
not a pro. It's crazy, man. His name's Alan Alcantara. He's a huge friend of mine. He's roughly 10 years older than me. We became best buddies. He's an amazing videographer, photographer, a bunch of other things. He's just an amazing person. But he ended up getting a brain hemorrhage during sparring.
Oh, wow.
We had a couple guys. Yeah, thankfully it was like a freak accident and a freak miracle because he's 100% okay now. Can't box, but yeah, it was. I think it was my first sparring partner.
Were you a fighter in school? Like, did you get in trouble?
Yes and no. I never turned down a fight, but it never happened. You get me?
Yeah.
Like, just to point out real, there's this kid, he was a super cocky kid because his mom was a teacher at our school. He just joined varsity wrestling, and I was sitting down in my English class. Same class, same height. This dude just thinks he's a shit now. He goes up to me. He's like, hey, Chris, you want to fight? So I stand up. I'm like, yo, what the fuck? Hell yeah. Like, what's up? He's like, oh, no. It was like, and it happened with so many other guys. There's one time, me and my friends, you know, we roughhouse each other. So my friend pushed me. I went back flying and I ended up bumping this guy. And I was like, oh, my bad. I ended up flying forward. So I turn around like, yo, what the fuck? Right? I take off my backpack. I had my hands in my air. He was like, you'll catch me later. And every time I seen him walking, he was like, my brother's going to get out real soon. Talking about his brother's going to get out of jail. And, but it just never happened. Guys threatening to jump me and my friends, but it just never happened. But I was always down for it. It just thankfully never happened.
So did you recognize yourself, or was it like your family or something? But did you, from my understanding, from how you've talked to us today, it seems like it was you. But did you recognize yourself that you obviously recognize that, okay, you like to fight. Then did you recognize that you needed to channel that in a different way than fighting on the streets or at school?
Not that I had to channel it different. I found it fun. Like to this point, when someone asks, like, why do you fight? I was like, it's fun. It's a different feeling being in there. Of course, you get all these, especially now as a career, you get all these different nervous feelings behind it. But to me, I found it fun. I sadly beat up my brother a lot as a kid, you know? So it was like those things like I enjoyed. It was just me and him banging it out. But it wasn't me trying to find an outlet. I'm not even sure if I had problems as a kid like that, but I did have probably like an anger issue that I had to work out somehow. I quit soccer to try boxing that first year right before wild card. I was doing soccer for a year, and I was really good. I made 9 goals my first year. It was fun. But even then, I would look at my teammates and I'd be like, y'all got number 4. And I would just grab them by the shirt and throw them down. Like, I was just always like a little aggressive kid. But if you ask anybody, I'm like the nicest guy possible. But at the same time, I do enjoy it.
So our last week, our guest was it last week, Mike, or 2 weeks ago? It was during the Munguia fight here in Ontario, mm-hmm. California. We had Ricardo Sandoval, who's another flyweight. And we know you sparred him in the past. What do you remember about that sparring session?
He's very accurate. Very well placed shots. It is not thunderous power, but because he's able to correctly put in the shots where he wants to, you can feel it. It makes an impact throughout the little rounds you're going. I don't remember the sparring session too much. It's like how many rounds we went and if we alternated, but that's what I do remember. He's very accurate, good defense, but just very accurate. That's what I remember most. That's when I was sparring Rockwell. I was like, yeah, he's a good fighter, man. He's just very accurate.
So he's a little bit ahead of you, obviously. I think he's, what is he, Mike, 24 and 2, something like that?
Yeah, around there, 22 and 2, 23 and 2.
Something. Yeah. So he's right.
He's a world title contender.
Right. So he's right on the cusp of, like, fighting those top 10 guys and getting to a world title shot. He's on the cusp there where he didn't sign to Golden Boy Promotions. How long do you think, you've been in the ring with him before, even though it was a sparring session, but you've experienced that type of skill. How long do you think before he kind of gets a shot at one of those elite guys in the flyweight division?
Ricardo or myself?
Let's go with Ricardo, and then we'll go to you.
I think his next fight should be for a world title. If you look back, the fight he had with Golden Boy, I think he got dropped in the 11th or 12th round, the 2 fights ago. Mm-hmm. Not the last fight, and not so maybe, what, 3 fights ago then? The guy he lost to fought for a world title. So if he would have beat that guy, he should have fought for that world title. So I think his next fight, he should definitely get the world title, and I'm rooting for him. So
and what about you? You know, obviously it's still, you're 8-0, But how long do you think, assuming you have this continued success, which obviously you'd like to, at what point do you think that, like, how many fights in do you think, like, okay, this is when I need to level up to that upper echelon of the fighters in this division?
Well, this will be my, this will be an 8-round fight. And then after that, the plan is to do 2 more 8-rounds or maybe 1 more and just jump into 10 rounds. And those is when things start getting a little more serious. I would say before 15 fights, mainly not just because of me rushing the pace, but me also knowing there's not that many people in our division. It's only mainly like high elite class fighters. So the bracket's really small. So everybody just to get fight each other.
So when you turn to pro, were you scouted by any promoters, or who exactly, or did you have any conversations with anybody where you thought it would have led to somewhere, anything like that?
Yeah. So I turned pro with my old trainer, Superman. I wasn't officially signed to a manager, but he was telling me, having talks of being signed with Top Rank. I met Brad, I forgot his last name, but I think he's the matchmaker for
Goodman.
Top Rank. Yeah. And so they came back, they had some newspapers downstairs. I met him, you know, we took a picture and all that. I think it's still on my Instagram. But my first pro fight was under a Top Rank event under collaborating with Bash Boxing. So I thought after that it would continue to go good. I had, I think I broke my nose during that year, so I had to be off for a bit. And then after that, I just couldn't get fights. So that's why there was such like a long layoff if you check my box rec. And then I got hit with 360, and I had a couple fights with them, and I had a couple fights fall off. COVID happened, and then things just changed like that. But it was at the beginning, nothing. I didn't have an amateur standout, so it was just all word of mouth. And, hey, you know, Top Rank likes that you're sparring Jesus Cuellar. Oh, I was like, yo, show them videos, because I was putting in work. I was putting in work, you know. But it's just things like that. It was like my first guy, I remember I was just super nervous. I'm saying the only guy I was scared of was that big ass dude for my fifth fight. That's it. But I remember looking back at my first fight, and I was like nervous, you know, it's your pro debut. And this guy was like, I think he was like a multinational champion as when he was younger. He was undefeated. He was 1-0, you know, but took him out decision. But and then going back to when I look at back to the fight, it's because I was mainly conditioned. I should have stayed amateur for a little while longer. Like I was really learning on the job, which is another reason like I had to switch trainers. And thankfully I had, honestly, I am grateful that year I didn't fight because I gotten so much better. Life happened. I was able to move on to better things. So everything happens for a reason. And I'm a true believer in that.
And you don't take the Metro line to Wildcard Gym anymore, right?
Nah, you know what? One time I did because I had to take my car to the shop. I live here in the valley right now. So I left my car in the shop and I forgot my girlfriend had to work or something. So I was like, yo, I'm going to just take the bus. I took the bus all the way to North Hollywood Station, which is like where the orange line and the red line meet. And then from there, I just went and I was like, damn, everything looks the same. The only difference on the train now, which is crazy because I didn't have this, they got Wi-Fi and they got service down there. That's crazy. I remember I used to tell like anybody I was talking to, whether it be my friends, my girlfriend at the time, or like whoever, hey, I'm going underground, I'll call you later, you know. Yeah. I couldn't play games anymore, I couldn't listen to music, so that's a big difference. But still smells, you still see crazy people. The last time I was on the Metro, you know, the last time I'm telling you guys about, I seen some guy take a shit on the Vine station, like inside the station. Yeah, oh, I was like, wow. Well, there's that again, you know. But I got crazy. I got a bunch of stories, you know. But it's something I would not change. It's hard when people ask, like, where are you from? I was like, well, I went to Mayfair High School. I graduated out of there, so Lakewood, California. However, from ages 14 to 19, straight after high school, Monday through Friday, I was on the way to the gym, you know. So LA, you know, and some days I would skip the gym and go hang out with some friends that would, you know, we would get off on Florence Station, we would get off in Koreatown, we would, you know, I would take the bus and travel. I had freedom. Mm-hmm. I had no adult supervision, you get me? Like
right.
I was just patrolling and strolling around and seeing where I can find things, see what things to eat. I would look up things on the internet and be like, oh, this looks like a fun spot, let me go to Placita Olvera and then, you know, just check it out. I would not change it for the world. I had some crazy things where I had a knife on my neck at one point. I seen fights happen right here in front of me as I'm sitting down on the bus. So I've seen some stuff, but like it's nothing that would not change.
Whoa. You can't just skip over. You had a knife to my throat and then you just skipped over it.
Yeah. You got to touch on that, man.
It's a crazy memory that I remember so vividly, but it's nothing. Nothing, thank God, would have happened because it's just crazy people. It's nothing I did anything. It's just I would assume drugs. So me and my friend, used to get off at the San Pedro station right there, downtown South Central, right? And I would get off there too sometimes. But we're leaving the gym. And we're both on the blue line right away from Pico. If you guys are familiar, it's just the second, third stop. So it's right away from 7th Street. We're sitting down. I'm on the window seat. He's on the seat or vice versa. My friend's on the window seat. I'm on this one. And we're talking to each other. We're talking about girls. That's what I remember vividly. We were just talking about girls and blah, blah, blah. We were kids. And then my friend leaves because the San Pedro station, you know, we go boom. He leaves. Right away, I'm just listening to music. I'm just chilling. It's like 9 o'clock at night. So I'm trying to fall asleep before I get off. I'll get off on Artesia. And that's where my parents majority of the time. If I wasn't able to pick up the 130 bus, it'll pick me up in Compton, you know, late at night at 9:30, 10 p.m. at night. But I was chilling, falling asleep. And I don't know it. You guys know what I'm talking about. You feel something. Oh, perfect. I got a pen right here. I felt this.
Right.
This is how close it was.
Yeah.
I turn around slowly. Thank God. This close. And I seen, like, not even my full neck. I seen an open blade on my neck. And this crazy old white lady behind me is saying, your friend should have used this to protect himself. Again, very clear memory. And again, we were talking about females. So nothing to do with the conversation. We were both having fun. Nothing to do aside, like immediately my mind were like, yo, what the fuck do I do, right? Like everything happened in slow motion. Like, do I turn around and just like bah, 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 bah? I was like, nah, that wouldn't look good as a little immigrant kid beating up an old Wiley, you know? So I was like, never mind, let me not do that. I was like, okay, it's still in slow motion. Like, what if I just get up? Hopefully she doesn't follow me. So I just picked it up and she just looked at me and left. I was like, oh fuck. And I just got off on the train and got the next one. But I was like, yo, that was some crazy shit. And I remember I didn't tell my mom until like 2 months later, but there's nothing she can do. My mom, she was like, ay, mijo, todo está bien. You know, she felt bad. But guess what? The next day she took me to the gym. I mean, took me to the train. It's just like, this is the life I chose. And she didn't support it, but she supported it. But she did know the risk because as a kid, we did take the Metro a lot together to go to like, you know, studios and all that. So my mom is aware of what goes on, but never did she think there would be a freaking knife on your neck.
No mom wants to hear that.
Of course, even my mom was like, what'd you do? And I was like, I didn't do anything to cause it. It was just random. So it's a crazy story that has nothing dramatic behind it. It was just wrong timing. Thank God I acted slowly because any fast movement, who knows what could have happened, right?
So would you say that if somebody wanted to ask about what an experience is like in LA or a life experience, would you say you'd be able to tell them a pretty good description?
Yeah, as far as like the Metro goes, you know, like it's
I mean, because the Metro takes you all over the place. And like, I mean, you said that you've taken it pretty much all over the place.
Anywhere you want to. You get me? Sometimes I'll look at the map on the different colors and I'll be like, I want to go here today. And it was fun. To me, I found it fun. I like finding new ways to get around. To get to the same destination, to the Tierra Mía in Huntington Park, I found 5 different ways to get there. So, you know, like my friends didn't have cars. From my friends from high school, we were young, we were like freshmen, sophomores. So, hey, you know, right after school, follow me. Let's take the train. I would take them to the train. We would walk the Hollywood Walk of Fame with my friends, and they're all complaining. I'm like, yo, this shit stinks. I'm like, yeah, it's okay. We'll get to the good part later, you know. But It I guess it was not something that I was like proud of, like, hey, check out my BMW, right? But it was just my life. This is what I knew. This is what I embraced. It was fun.
So the what was the first car you ever had?
First car I you still my same car. Well, I wouldn't say I had it, but my dad let me drive his 2000 CRV. I remember Honda. I used to always be, a little Honda. I used to be ashamed of it because it had all this construction stuff, right? So it was always super dirty. But I got my car when I was like 19, 2013 Honda Civic. And that's what I still drive. Finally paid off. So hoping it stays for another extra 4 years, you know?
Right. Did you ever miss taking the Metro after you got that car? Like the first couple of weeks, you're like, oh, wow, I don't have to take the Metro anymore.
I didn't miss the train until I got older. Like now I'm like, damn, it feels good. Just sit down and not worry about anything. Yeah. Right. And then when I recently hopped on, I was like, yeah, I don't know if I can keep on doing that though. I'd rather drive.
So you're focusing on your fight this Saturday, June 24th at the theater, Madison Square Garden. Have you ever been to New York before?
Never been to New York. I'm staying 2 days after to enjoy time. Me and my girl just try to experience the city. I'm excited.
So I'm glad you're staying to kind of experience it. Obviously 2 days, you can only do so much, but you're going to get to do some stuff. So we want you to come back on at one point or another later this year.
I'd love to.
And give us your take on the subway system over there, because the New York City is looked at as like one of the best subway systems and one of the best. They have their own system, obviously, that's above ground, just like here in LA, and then, underground and all that stuff. And I mean, according to a lot of people,
maybe ours is trash. Ours is trash. I used to always call my mom like, yo, I'm gonna be late because there's a 40-minute delay.
Right. Oh, you're right. Yeah.
Ours is trash.
There's a lot of delays. But, in those 2 days or the days that you're there or the 2 days after your fight, if you're going to take the Metro or the subway system over there, check it out just to kind of compare. When you come back on, we want you to talk about what the differences are, any similarities. And, because would you call yourself a seasoned rider on the Metro in Los Angeles?
Yeah, definitely. I can take you anywhere.
Yeah, so exactly. Anywhere. So, I mean, in 2 days, you're not going to be an expert rider in the New York system. But, you being a seasoned rider over here in the Los Angeles area, you have a little bit more, experience to kind of recognize certain things over there. So do you have any plans? Obviously, you're going to focus on your fight and all that, which we'll touch on in a second. But is there anything specifically that you want to do in New York?
Eat.
Or check out?
Eat. I want to try all the food. I want to try the pizza. I want to see if I can go to Jersey, try a sub. I know that's not that. I think they call it hoagie, right?
Maybe.
I think
we're
so.
We're in California too, so it's.
I'm big into Gary Vaynerchuk. He's a huge.
We were just about to ask you about that. Yeah.
Inspiration. He's definitely shaped the person I am today with this content over the years. So I want to see if I can check out the Vayner office, in Hudson Yards. There's like a couple people I want to go meet, I have some networking I got over there, but I'm not sure if I can talk about it just yet. So
you don't have to later when on. When it happens, come back on and we'll talk about it. But you touched on Gary Vaynerchuk. He obviously goes by Gary V as well.
Yeah.
Because we have that written down in our notes, we were going to ask you about that. How did you said he's an inspiration to you? How did that come about? How did you start looking up to him and him categorizing him as an inspiration to yourself?
I can't remember the first time. Apparently, to my girlfriend, she introduced me to him. I don't remember. I just know for sure Instagram, right? Like just seeing his content. The one thing that always sticks out to me is just like his. Realistic positivity, a couple quotes. You go to a retirement home and the number one thing they always talk about is regret. So that's something my dad always preached to me about as well, as like, just don't have no regrets in anything. So like win, lose, draw with this fight is like, how many people can say they fought in TV as a Mexican kid coming straight out of, Mexico. It's just like, I'm living the dream. I'm enjoying the process. So it's a lot of, I feel like I just repeat a lot of the shit he says, but a lot of shit he says has really been ingrained into me for a good thought. Have no regrets. Enjoy the journey. It's not about the actual destination. It's about the way there. If anybody has ever looked like you, been in the situation you've been, or anything similar, you got no excuse. You get me? Like, I know it was harder for me. It still is hard, right? Like, I'm on the B side for this fight. I got offered a couple of B side fights that I think were stupid. But, hey, I never turned down anything. And it's going to happen. It's not a matter of if. It's just a matter of when. So, it's just like, I love that mentality of it. And then over the years as an athlete, I just delved into like more like the business side of what he was preaching and everything else. But yeah, truly love that guy.
How would you describe him for our listeners who aren't aware of who Gary V is? How would you describe who he is and what he's about?
Positive, business wise, entrepreneur in many different categories, extremely nice and approachable, very busy. But if you're watching his content, very bold, which is why I like a lot of people kind of don't like him. He's very bold, in your face, cursing. I fuck with it. But a lot of people don't. A lot of people turn it off. But that's why he created the V-Friends brand. So, you know, to not have him directly preach that positivity and have his characters preach it.
You always say, don't meet your heroes, Christian. But you actually met him, right? I'm pretty sure I saw a picture with you and him on your Instagram.
A couple times, man. A couple times. I recently just saw him in last month in May. I flew out to Indianapolis for one day to go and try to, you know, talk to him and a couple of other people. But yeah, I met him at the first. No lies. Yeah. Last year and at VCon as well in Minneapolis, and then right after that, he had an event at some shoe spot in LA, and I went up to him. I told him I had my A fight. I have a video of it. Oh, I was like, yo, I just won my fight. He was like, let's fucking go. But he was like, he remembered me. And that's the thing. Like, he remembers those little details. It might take him a while because he meets a shitload of people, but he truly remembered who I was. And it was just like, yo, it was super, it felt good, you know, to not just be like someone else. He really remembered. So it was cool. I can say, like, he knows me, which is super, super cool.
So, I mean, you know, who knows, maybe in the future, especially if your career goes the way that you want it to go, maybe he can make that ring walk with you one day. Would you like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, that'd be dope. You know, I will support Gary in majority of anything he puts on, just because I know how much his content has helped me develop as a young man. Growing up, I had... I think one day, you know, me and my father have been getting better at a relationship, but as a growing up, we didn't have the best relationship. You know, he was the Mexican dad who did his job and provided, but nothing much after that. So I got a lot of like role models from the people at the gym, all these pro fighters, all these males that I looked up to, Gary, especially being one of them. So, you know, I am blessed to be surrounded by a lot of positive people that really shaped my mindset. You know, like I am, because I am the person I am today based on a lot of people. He's one of them.
So Gary, if you're listening to this, you know, in the future, if Christian Robles, you know, as he elevates his profile in the sport of boxing as a professional fighter, that ring walk is there's an invitation on the table, right?
Christian? More than welcome. Yeah. You can come out anytime. It'll be my honor.
So moving on to June 24th, like we just touched about a couple times, Madison Square Garden, the theater in New York City. You're fighting, let me see if I can get this right. Is it Take? Do we know how to?
Yankiel Rivera.
Is it, how do you say the first name?
Yankiel.
Is it with a Y?
Yeah.
Oh, we have it with a T. Never mind.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's with a Y.
It's a little easier now, right?
Yeah, and it's way easier now. Okay, Yankiel Rivera Figueroa, 3-0. So he obviously has less professional fights than you do at the moment. But you said a little earlier that you feel that you're the B side.
I am. I know I am. He's the one signed to Matchroom. They have him on the fast route to the world title. I forgot which interview I read or heard. It was maybe against his fight against Fernando Diaz that they were like, yeah, he's on the fast track to the world title. They want him to fight Bam Bam pretty soon. So, like, I know the position I'm in. I know, like, where they see me at, right? And because, I mean, think about it. His fight with Fernando was an 8-rounder. And now for me, it's an eight rounder. So they're really pushing him fast into four fights. He's a Puerto Rican Olympian. So they're trying, you know, and I'm here to stop those plans.
So it's the Matchroom card. Eddie Hearn's obviously the head over there at Matchroom Boxing, and Matchroom and DAZN right now have pretty much a stranglehold on, if you want to call it that, on the flyweight division, super fly division. That's where all the guys are at, those top 10 contenders. What would a win, especially against a guy like this, a Puerto Rican Olympian, who is the A side, what would a win for you show somebody like Eddie Hearn and the Matchroom people over there about you? Because obviously any promoter, and Eddie Hearn has shown in the past, you know, after a fighter wins, it's not signed to him, he'll look at them and say, oh, okay, let me talk to you, let me see what you got, because that's a possibility, right?
When it stays on, that's what Eddie says, when it stays on.
It is a possibility, and it's crazy how this comes back full circle. I think I messaged Eddie Hearn before my fourth pro fight. I sent him a DM. I had no right to at that point, but I sent him a DM because that's when DAZN first launched, and he was looking for fighters to sign left and right, offering them millions and millions of dollars. Right? So I was like, oh, let me shoot my shot. Never happened, but it was always someone I was very interested in. I felt like he was a great promoter. Just the way he actually like put on every fighter, not just the top guys. And then Canelo Saunders, that was in Dallas, Texas, right? I went to that fight and I snuck in after the fight ended all the way downstairs. I wasn't trying to meet Canelo. I mean, that would have been cool, but I didn't meet him. I was trying to talk to Eddie and tell him a little about myself. I took a selfie with him. Me and my girl took a selfie with him, but I was like, yo, blah, blah, blah. Like, I'm the guy. Come look at me, you know, like, blah, blah, blah. He gave me the matchmaker's name. Turns out I actually had his number and name and email from a different contact. But it was like nothing ever happened. And then now it's like full circle where, hey, you talked to me before, you know, like, and now it's going to happen. And I'm going to show you not only I can fight, but that I'm markable. You know, I know I am. I'm very well spoken. I can fight. I got heart. I got extremely heart, and I have grit. I will continue fighting, and I will show my Mexican pride in every manner. And I think I have a very fan-friendly style, but also very smart compared to most traditional come-forward Mexican fighters. So I think he's going to like what he sees.
How long ago did the Matchroom team reach out to you for this fight?
I had a good camp. I had about 10 weeks.
No, how long ago did the Matchroom team reach out to you to offer you this fight?
10, 12 weeks ago. Yeah. So I got the offer from my manager, and she asked me, and I said, yes, right away. Let's do it. And then, the fight, you know, it didn't get like officialized. So a couple of weeks later, negotiations and all that from, I guess, their side, but I had a good camp.
So when you heard from your manager, that Matchroom had a card coming up in New York City, and then they were looking for you, like, hey, do you want to fight on this card against this guy? We're looking for an opponent. Did it automatically pop up in your mind, like all those times that you spoke to Eddie Hearn, or you messaged him, or you saw him in Dallas, Texas, Canelo Saunders, like, hey man, maybe he remembered me, and like, oh, there, I remember this flyweight kid, he, you know, came up to me a couple times.
No, so the way it worked is, we're actually, man, I'm just trying to get my shot, to be honest with you, you know? So I was like, I'm willing to fight anybody and everybody, like, just, I've never been put on. So I feel like I've always, I had one fight in Mexico. One, just, that's it. All my other fights have been in the U.S. compared to, like, majority fights, with, like, all their fights are down there, right? Like, I've had all my fights here in L.A., and L.A. is a tough scene. And I've gotten better, and I've learned on the job, and I'm, like, I was willing to always risk it all, because, hey, let's see where this goes. That's my main thing. Let's just see where this goes. Give it your all and let's just go for it. So a couple fights ago, or maybe like within the last year or so, I guess, we were asked to fight the guy, Anthony Herrera. He's with Matchroom. I'm not sure if he's still with Matchroom, but it's at 115 on the Arizona card. Immediately I said yes. It was within 3 weeks. And I said, yes. And I felt like my life was about to change. So I was like, let's do it. I was ecstatic. And then it fell into like some holiday. I think it was like during Thanksgiving or something. And I had asked my job. I was like, yo, like, because they said everybody has to work or you get fired. So I asked them, thankfully, they gave me the days off. They said no, that they chose someone else. They had some other guy on the poster. All good. I mean, that's how boxing is. And then within a day before, either the day or 2 days before the weigh-in, they reached out back to me and saying that their fight fell out, that they would like me to come in. They offered me a stupid amount of money that I was like, yeah, you get me? However, I truly believe in myself, and I truly believe, even though I was getting ready for that fight, a cut that much wouldn't be, it just wouldn't be me in there. You get me? Like, risk, put anything on the line besides like your ability to perform. And I didn't feel like I was going to be ready within a day and a half, because you still have to fly out to Arizona. So I was like, nah. And they were like, what number do you want? And I was like, it's not about that. You know what I'm saying? It sucked, man, because I have a lot of pride, and I felt like a bitch, you know? And I was like, I got to say yes. My girl was like, no, it's not worth it. Like, you'll get your shot later. I was like, yeah, you know, it just sucks. Because like now, like I was getting ready, like, why does shit happen like this? Blah, blah, blah. And I was very sad. But, you know, honestly, very happy. Things happen for a reason. Fight didn't happen. We were, I think, February, looking to fight him in June, Anthony again. Because that's we knew he had him, and we knew I had to move up in weight. I was going to move up to 115. We know he's strong. You know he's fast. But it's a good fight that I think I can win. And it was just like, damn, like it just sucks I have to go up in weight, because I can make 112 pretty easy. And it's just, but like, I have to get my name out there somehow. And if I take a loss, like, sometimes a good performance will put you out there, you know? Like, don't be afraid of that. Like, just people are afraid of losing. And that they don't take the risk to see where they're at, to see how great they are. So, like, I was willing to risk it all, go up in weight, yada, yada, go against whatever they had. And I think he got injured or something around those lines, so we couldn't fight him, or he was going to fight sometime in June. I'm not really sure. But we got offered to fight Yankiel in February, that they were looking into it. So I was like, oh, yeah, let's do it. You know, like, he's a quarter Olympian. He's 2-0. And then a week later, we see on his box rack, because he had nothing on box rack. Then a week later, he's fighting Fernando. I was like, where did this happen? Like, out of nowhere, right? So I had a fight fell out. I think I was supposed to fight in April. That fell out, or whatever. And then the fight got presented again. And I was like, yo, let's do it. Like, so it wasn't like a surprise at that point. I already had the mixed emotions when I was going to fight Anthony. I was like, my breakthrough fight, blah, blah, blah. But again, full circle, like, at my weight, at 112 now. Super, super happy. Yeah, it just, everything happens for a reason. And it's just like something, going back to Gary, man, it's not just about hard work. It's about patience. And that shit is hard. Patience is hard. And you want to stop half the time. You get me? Like, sometimes, like, when I was training, I wouldn't say, like, recently, but, like, especially, like, amateurs or during that year that my nose broke or whatever, it was just like, what are you training for? Like, you got nothing. It just feels, you just feel empty. Like, there's no goal to you work so hard to do for what? Like, you got nothing to show for it. But now it's game time. So.
Well, Christian, obviously we wish you the best of luck this Saturday, June 24th. It's on the DAZN card, right? This is a DAZN card. This is your first time fighting on DAZN too as well, right?
My first televised fight, man. Super happy. Like, this is super cool. You get me? Like, that, it's like, I'm not being starstruck by it. I'm like, I'm enjoying it. It's like, yo, this is cool. I'm going to be on TV, man. Of course, I feel a little bit of pressure. I feel the pressure, but I tend to feel like I shine under it. So pressure make diamonds.
You think this, I mean, I don't want to say you think, because I'm pretty sure I know the answer, but you think this is the moment in your career now to show the world, like, you know, you're on, you know, not just national television, this is worldwide television. The zone's available like everywhere.
Yeah, global.
And you're fighting under one of the biggest promoters in the world, in Eddie Hearn and Matchroom Boxing. You know, I mean, you think that this is your moment, right?
Yeah, I think this is my moment. They asked me for like a little statement. And I was like, yo, this is like, I'm super grateful for the moment. But at the end of the day, that's exactly what it is. It's my moment. And I'm excited to show that. I feel like I've been slept on, you know, like, I didn't have amateur experience like that, but all the experience I got was sparring world champions and Olympians at Wildcard. And that's way better than any local amateur I could have fought in the tournament. You know, I sparred plenty of Olympians, plenty of world champions. So his pedigree is not something that deters me. I'm excited. I'm excited to show what I got, and I'm going for the win, going for however it comes. And you know what? Let's just say worst come scenario, I lose this fight. I'm going to get another shot. And then we'll go from there. Like I said, it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. So it doesn't deter me. I feel like a lot of fighters, when they take the loss, and it sucks because of how boxing fans are, it's like, oh, what are you going to do now? Like, bro, like, you don't tell a teacher you had a bad day, you should quit your job. You know, like, it's just another opportunity. You got to keep on grinding. It's like, yo, I'm young. I'm undefeated, and we're going to keep on going. I'm good. I know I'm good.
Who's
I got that shit.
No, it's all right. That's what we like, man. Hey, man, people like people who talk, man. When we have guests who don't talk, people are just like, hey, don't get that person on anymore. And you don't hit that level at all, man. You're talkative. So we love that. We love that. This is one thing I forgot to ask you. Besides yourself, who's the best flyweight in the world today?
I think it's Bam Bam. Jesse. Mm-hmm. I think so.
You don't think it's Sonny Edwards?
No, you know, I watched him fight for the first time, and I was like, he's tricky, right? Like, he has that little awkward style, but I think Bam Bam is just tough. Like, he's really solid. He's beating actual contenders. Like, the way he stopped I can't pronounce it. So, Rigginson, the Thai guy. Guadra is, like, it's an insane amount. Yeah, it's great angles. Like, he's got, from what I hear, I never sparred him. But from what I hear, like, he carries his power throughout all the rounds. So, yeah, I feel like, man, he's probably the best flyweight out there right now. And it's going to be tough for anybody to beat him. Other than that, Chocolatito, right? Like, Chocolatito still got it. I was blessed to share the ring with him. So
That's right. Yeah, we had that listed. So, you know, and he's obviously a Hall of Famer when he retires. You know, he's when people think of this generation's flyweight, super flyweight,
yeah,
they're going to think his name, right? Pound.
Yeah, and I did pretty good.
Yeah,
so I'm super, super happy for that.
How long ago was that?
That was a couple years ago. It was just far, man. It was just a drive to Indio every day. It was just 2-hour drive back and forth. And then right after that, I would have to go to work, right? So it was just tough. It was tough for me to keep on going, especially without like that much flexibility. Mm-hmm. But it was great work. I was there for a couple of weeks. So, you know, Monday, I think this part Tuesday and Thursdays, we were going, and we would do 4-minute rounds. So it was tough, especially because of the 110 degrees out there. Like, it's crazy. You can actually feel that in the ring. So it's devastating, but I left him a little bruise. He left me a little bruise. It was good work. I'm really, really happy. And not only that, like, I'm blessed, you know, because they know me now. You know, like, you get that respect from the champions, which is the best. Like, I don't mean to talk down on him and say, like, oh, I gave him, like, a small black eye. But it's just like, you get the respect that they know, like, hey, he can fight. We want him back. And that felt the best. I was like, you get that. I don't like the validation from others, but you get the validation from the top people. It's like, oh, man, you're good. We want you back. You get me? And that's a great feeling, because that just makes you, like, believe in yourself a little more. It's like, hey, this guy's number one. And I sparred him for the Yafai fight.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so when everybody thinks he was out, and he got the world title again.
Man. Yeah. That guy's he's an anomaly, man. He's, you know, he had those losses to Sorung Visai, and then people thought, like, oh, yeah, I guess he had a great run. And then he comes back and gets that train going again. It's like, man, that was crazy.
You just can't get up. You get me? You just can't give up. You get me? Like, that's the thing. When you think back, like, people, as a pro fighter, looking back as an amateur, even too, I would think back all the pro fighters that lost early in their career. If I'm correct, I think Marquez lost early on. Nonito Dernier lost early on. Pacquiao got knocked out before he came to America. I seen a video of him getting dropped with a jab. You get me? Like,
Jorge Linares. Yeah.
Yeah, like the top guys have been stopped or lost earlier in their career. I'm undefeated, so I don't got to go through that route. But I started as an 0-4 fighter. You get me? So I remember when I told Marvin when we got that fourth fight as a victory team, I was like, hey, it's crazy. We went from 0-4 to 4-0, you know? Like, here we are now.
And he's going to New York with you, right?
Yeah, he'll be there.
So he's going to be there for that moment, man, right there in the corner with you, right?
Yeah, we make a little joke at the at Wild Card, they're having the CPR test, like certification on the 24th. And Mario's like, oh, I won't be able to make it your fight if I take my CPR. I was like, you better fucking not do that. Yeah, but he's funny. He's a very calm guy, which is crazy. Like, when I'm with Marvin in the dressing room, he's just calm. You get the little nerves here and there, but they're just super calm. He doesn't talk much, which is like the only thing I would change about Marvin. I just wish his voice was a little louder, because sometimes you just can't hear him. I just hear the other corner instead. That's it. Like, I just wish I could hear him more. But he's just so calm. He doesn't talk too much. He makes little comments every now and then, and it just keeps me relaxed. I don't feel so nervous in the dressing room. And I wouldn't say I'm relaxed either, but it's just more like anxious. Let's get this going. Let's roll. It's time to shine.
Have you talked to Frank?
I'm really looking forward to those booths, man. I'm really looking forward to I can't stop picturing it, but a lot of people will fall under that too, right? Like, we'll feel like, oh, they're going to boo me. What if they don't like me? Like, I'm excited for that. I'm excited to make those into cheers.
Have you talked to Freddie Roach for this fight? Has he given you any advice?
Nah, I don't. Okay. He's got me sparring, but I let my head trainer do all that.
Got it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because this is a big moment, man. You're right. You have a huge opportunity here, but it seems like regardless, you have a good mentality going into it. Like you said, you obviously want to come out on the winning side, and we know you're going to try everything you can to come out victorious. Like you said, some of the best fighters in history had early losses. And then when they ended their career, or when they're getting towards the end of their career, they're one of the best fighters in the world and Hall of Famers. So, you know, it's a good mentality to have, especially in the fight game, you know, because you got to take risks to be great, right?
Yeah, you have to, or else you stay stuck. And that goes, like, I think that's why every boxing movie, most are good, is because boxing is truly a metaphor for life. Right. You get dropped, you get back up. You are down early in the fight. You know, you still got a couple more rounds left in the fight. You know, I'm still 26 years old, so I have 70 something plus years, if everything goes right in my life, to make anything else right. Like, who cares? That's the thing. Like, who cares what people think, man? Like, just do what you want that makes you happy for the time being. Try it. Like, what's the worst that happens? You fail? Who fucking cares? Like, you get me? Like, it sucks. Don't get me wrong, but like, it sucks more knowing that you didn't try. So you just give it your all, so you don't have acid. And have fun with it. And I'm truly having fun. And I mean this with no, like, oh, I don't care what happens. Nah. I'm going in there to win, hopefully stop this guy, and I'm going with it all. But at the end of the day, like, nothing deters me from it. Like, it's all good. It's the next one. On to the next one. And when it's finally over, fuck it. It was good. On to the next chapter of my life. Whatever that is. At this moment, I have no clue. But we'll figure that out, you know?
Absolutely. And on that note, obviously, Christian, we appreciate you coming here on The Last Round, first time ever, hopefully not the last. And before we let you go, before we end this interview, go ahead and let people know where they can find you and follow you. Do you have any social media, any YouTube channels, anything you got out there, man? Go ahead and plug it.
No YouTube channel just yet. I don't know about all that, but for sure, follow me on Christian.Robles on Instagram. Check out my website, christianrobles.com. That should have all the plugs, everything else. That's my official merch. Worked on it myself, me and my girlfriend. So super proud of all the designs we put out. We have a Guerrero/Warrior shirt. And that's my favorite, because that truly represents me. You get me? Like, you got to be a warrior in and out the ring. So go ahead and preach it. Live it out. Get the inner warrior out of you. A little shameless plug in there. But, you know, follow me on Christian.Robles on Instagram and continue in following the journey, and appreciate everybody supporting. It truly means a lot, because right now, all those supporters, for the most part, I know are real. And then it's after this fight where I, like, everything goes well, I'm a blow up. And, you know, it sucks to say, but I know majority of those are, it's just not that real. You get me? And they will fall off as soon as you lose. So it's just already embraced. You get me? Like, I'm already seeing from other fighters what happened. And, like, I love learning from other people's mistakes. So, but for right now, man, like, I'm super grateful for everybody that's been supporting the career from the early on, from the get-go. Like, appreciate y'all. Y'all truly mean a lot to me. It has helped. I did a recent interview, like, a couple fights ago, where they asked me, like, who are you grateful for the most? And at the end of the day, like, I don't feel bad for saying this, but it's myself. Because at the end of the day, like, it's up to you to put in the work. It's up to you to hop on the train. It's up to you to do everything. I couldn't have done this with myself, but I couldn't have done this. I mean, I couldn't have done this without other people, but I definitely couldn't have done this without the self-belief in myself. You get me? Because you are your best supporter or the person that's going to tear you down. So, yeah, you know what? I talk a lot, bro. So here's my message to everybody is just believe in yourself, because no one else will believe in you like you believe in yourself. So believe in yourself where everybody will tell you not to. I had a lot of people tell me that boxing isn't for me because I truly sucked as an amateur, I think. But look at me now. All right. Exactly. Don't let that stop you. Don't let anything stop you. Just keep on reaching for your goals, and hard work and patience truly pays off. And it's going to pay off June 24th. We're going for 9-0, maybe 4 knockouts. Let's go. We're going to get signed a match room. And that's the dream.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So you said June 24th, this upcoming Saturday, at the Theater of Madison Square Garden in New York City on DAZN, a match room boxing event. Christian Robles goes up against Yankiel Rivera Figueroa in a battle of undefeated fighters. So check it out on DAZN. Mike, go ahead before we completely sign off. Go ahead and let them know where they can find us and follow us.
At The Last Round 12 on Instagram and Twitter. Be sure to catch us next week.
Awesome. So for our guest of the week in flyweight, 8-0 with 3 KOs, Christian Robles. For my co-host, Michael Shepard, I'm Danny Z. This is The Last Round.
Thanks for supporting and listening to the show. Follow us at The Last Round 12 on social media. Rate, review, and subscribe. This is The Last Round Podcast.